This podcast is Challenging Opinions and is presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading the Challenging Opinions podcast for September 17th, 2018. The alternative media has given us way more choice than we had in the pre-internet era. In this show, I'm talking to the editor-in-chief of a more offbeat news aggregator and asking whether alternative media is reliable.
Challenging Opinions is the podcast where ideas are tested. Whether you are left or right, conservative or progressive, devout or skeptic. What matters is the strength of your argument, not the strength of your voice.
In a few minutes we'll have this, but when you mix that in with stuff like 9/11 truth, Sandy Hook conspiracy theories, doesn't that undermine the legitimacy of every real story that you promote on your website?
Well, I think there's nothing wrong with questioning events. I mean, as to Sandy Hook, I'm not saying the event didn't transpire or anything like that.
Vladimir Putin is either being really stupid or really clever. Yes, I'm talking about the Russian affair again. No, not that one. The other one. Try to keep track. A nerve agent, easily traceable to a Russian laboratory, was used in Salisbury, England, to try to murder a Russian defector to the UK. The Russian apologists, hearing hooves, immediately cried zebras. Why would they use something so obvious? Somebody must be setting the Russians up. Not quite. The KGB and its successors have a long history of committing spectacular murders of people they regard as traitors. Yes, they want to kill them, but they want to do so in a way that, even when they deny it, everyone still knows that it was them, particularly anyone in their own ranks who was thinking of changing sides. It serves as a warning. I should say here that they're not the only ones to use this tactic. Gareth Williams, a young British spy, was found dead in August 2010 in his bath inside a hold-all bag that was padlocked closed from the outside. He was naked, but there were no fingerprints on the bag or the lock or the bath. There was no evident cause of death, and two experts tried 400 times to lock themselves into a bag in the same way, but failed. British police, in cooperation with MI6, concluded that Williams probably locked himself in accidentally. But this attempted murder in Salisbury wasn't purely internal for the Russians. Sergei Skripal lived in the UK because he was swapped for Russian spies caught in the West. Going after him violated the rules that spy agencies normally stick to. He wasn't theirs to kill. The British have been investigating furiously, in every sense, and they were helped by the fact that the UK is the most highly videoed nation on Earth. 1/5 of all surveillance cameras on Earth are in the UK. There's about one for every 10 Brits. So it wasn't too hard for them to find a pair of suspicious-looking Russians who arrived in London from Moscow, took the 90-minute train journey to Salisbury, scouted out Skripal's house, and then returned to their London hotel. They then made the same journey the next day, and within hours, Sergei Skripal and his daughter were found poisoned with Novichok. The Russians were on their way back to London, where they took one of the two sets of flights that they had booked, leaving their luggage behind. So far, so Cold War. The British were able to find traces of Novichok in the London hotel room they had used, so there's really no doubt. The British published high-quality photos of the two Russians, who used the names Ruslan Borisov and Alexander Petrov. You might have expected the Russian government and its mouthpieces like RT and Sputnik to be sceptical in general without giving specifics. But after Putin said in public, in response to a set-up question, that they had been found, they turned up in a bizarre interview with RT, claiming that these were their real names. A whole series of lies were exposed from the interview, not least that they went to see Salisbury Cathedral. Timings on their CCTV sightings make that impossible. It's also very clear that these are not their real names and that their passports were issued by the secret services in Russia. All Russians over 14 must have what they call an internal passport. It's impossible to do many things without this document, although you can't use it for travelling abroad. But even to get on an internal train journey within Russia, you need it. And these guys' identities don't go back any further than 2009. So why go to the stupid risk of giving a TV interview, even if it was with a journalist from a totally compliant channel? Well, firstly, these guys are clearly no good as undercover spies anymore. Secondly, Kremlin mouthpieces like RT and Putin himself have barely been able to keep a straight face when they deny involvement in the poisoning. It took only hours for people to come up with a whole list of contradictions in their claims. But, as I said, there are unwritten rules in the spy business. It's a bit like the mafia code. Murdering anyone on foreign soil is not playing by those rules. Murdering people in a spectacular way, all the more so, and particularly trying to murder a spy that you've already swapped. This interview did not go ahead without Putin's authorization. He's upsetting a pretty settled international order. If he gets away with it, that's impressive. But if he won't play by the rules, he can hardly expect Western intelligence agencies to do so either. That disruption could be to his cost. As I said, he's either being really stupid or really clever.
Do you agree? Do you disagree? If you want your point of view heard, email podcast@challengingopinions.com and say what you think.
On the line now, I have Laurie Price. She's the editor-in-chief of Citizens for a Legitimate Government, also known as legitgov.org. Laurie, what's the exact purpose of the website? Are you a news aggregator?
Yes, generally, but we also have original content periodically.
And is it true to say that you take the news from a left-wing point of view?
Well, it's kind of odd, my views. Some of them would be possibly considered left-wing, and other views might not be falling into that wheelhouse. So,
if you had to describe that to the average American, where your political views and the website's political views lie, how would you describe it?
I guess generally libertarian, but anti-corporate in a way.
And I've been looking through a lot of the stories that you promote on your website. It does seem to me that you are, as you say, anti-corporate. You're not a fan of corporate America. And often on this podcast, I try and stay away from the T word because we hear too much of this person. But in general, what sort of stories do you run about President Trump?
Well, the stories on CLG in general, we try to get the underbelly of the news. I should take a step back before we get to Trump. For example, we will cover Fukushima, problems at nuclear plants, and questions that don't normally get raised. And we do question the events of 9/11, what actually happened there. And we will have stories that question U.S. role in the world. For example, we generally don't think Russia is the huge problem that it's made out to be. Intervention in Syria would be something we kind of aren't in favor of, so something like that. Once in a while, those views do overlap with what Trump espouses, so that's just the way it is. And if people agree with it, they do, and if they don't, they don't. But he has a cabinet with a lot of people that persuade him otherwise, so sometimes we're against some of those views, so that's how it would go.
What comes to my mind when I look through the stories that you promote, and you mentioned in particular about 9/11, which is 17 years ago now, people have grown up and are almost ready to vote in the elections coming up who weren't even born at the time. Are you sure that you're not undermining some of the causes that you promote when you talk about that? The 9/11 so-called truthers, that was, dare I say it, very fashionable for a while. Has it gone out of fashion?
Well, it may well have, but for example, last night I took the time to include a video link, and it's an 8-minute long compilation of voices of firefighters and first responders on what happened that day, and countless voices talking about explosions in the first floor and all that. Now, I just put that out there, and people can reject it, and people can say it's not their cup of tea, but it has to be covered. Questions surrounding 9/11 have to be covered. And if there are people in the truth movement that are sort of on the crazy side of things, mm-hmm. or have sort of, I don't know, oddball, where they're coming from an oddball perspective, I can't control where they're coming from. But all I can do is put it out there. And, you know, and these voices are there. For example, in that 8-minute clip, you can go there, look at the video, and decide mm-hmm. for yourself. That's what our job is. We put it out there. Once in a while, we do add a comment. In brackets, you'll see some comments added to the news that we aggregate on the website. So once in a while, I do add.
I'm wondering if that's true, because I spoke actually in the last podcast to a veteran leftist campaigner who talked about the Vietnam War, and some people who've studied history might remember something that he actually remembered from his real life, which was the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And this was supposedly happened in 1964. It was a manufactured clash, supposedly between an American ship and a Vietnamese ship, and it was used as an excuse to increase involvement in the Vietnam War. But that fake incident, which happened thousands of miles away in an effectively in a place where no members of the public had any opportunity to view it, within a couple of years that fake was exposed. Is it really plausible that in downtown Manhattan you could have had an army of people organizing a fake attack and demolishing buildings with explosives, and no real evidence of it be accepted almost a lifetime later?
Well, you wouldn't need an army, but there's tons of on the web of questions, people that were witness what happened there that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's WT-7 falling. What was that about?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of questions also about the plane hitting the Pentagon. There's groups, architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. There's many professionals that question the events. And the smartest way is to just put things out there, let people decide for themselves. And the fact that it's downtown Manhattan is true that, you know, it doesn't mean that the actual events didn't transpire that day. I mean, the buildings fell, so that's going to have happened.
Sure, but any of the alternative, the so-called truther narratives involve something like putting large amounts of explosives in a densely populated building in a densely populated area. If the Gulf of Tonkin incident was exposed within a couple of years, when it happened hundreds of miles, thousands of miles from the US and hundreds of miles from any land in a highly controlled area, our government just isn't that smart. They can't keep a lid on something that big for that long, can they?
Well, people can comment and on the events that happened that day and first responders and so forth. There's countless first responders that have talked about explosions, and especially that, like I keep referring to that 8-minute clip, that compilation of people that, I mean, these people are covered in dust and all that, and saying we heard explosions and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I know what you're saying about that it would be tough to keep, quote, a lid on something like that. So I understand that aspect. But these questions have not been answered all this time, and we need a real investigation is what we need. I don't know if we'll get one, but there's too many questions out there on what happened those days. A lot of people getting sick in Manhattan. Theory is, you know, something nuclear was used, so we don't know.
Okay. I would imagine that would have been picked up by Geiger counters. But nevertheless, you mentioned just at the start there that you don't view Russia as much of a threat as some people do. Can you expand on that a bit?
Well, there's countries that the U.S. slaps on the label of an ally, and they can do things that would be just huge media events if it was covered. Saudi Arabia, for example, with their beheaders. You know, I mean, people are constantly beheaded. It's a totalitarian regime, however you view it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an ally of the United States. So we don't hear very much about human rights abuses. I mean, people in general may say there's problems there. But in Russia, I mean, we have a president that's basically improved the lot of the people. And I frankly don't, I think it's insane to think, I think, what was it, $52 worth of Facebook ads were spent. I think it's ridiculous. And also we have intelligence agencies within the United States that can simulate attacks and make it seem like it was another country when it wasn't. I mean, I don't know the purpose of why this would go on, but this whole Russia interference, to me, it's a narrative that's just bogus. That's my view, but, you know, just putting it out there.
I've been to Russia. I've traveled extensively in Russia, and I think it's actually not technically true that Putin has improved the lives of the people, at least in the sense of the size of the economy. It has grown back to how large it was when he came to power first in 2000, having crashed in the meantime. And also I see on your website that you feature a lot of stories from RT, the Russia Today channel, which is Kremlin funded. And it is beyond question that critics of President Putin in Russia are murdered. Are you not even a little bit uneasy that you're promoting stories that are paid for out of the same pocket that machine guns murder journalists?
Well, let me ask you something. The poisonings of the Skiprals.
Mm-hmm. This is in Sainsbury, in Salisbury, in the UK.
Yes.
A former spy and his daughter recovered after being poisoned, and two other members of the public. One is seriously ill, and one has since died. Yeah.
Right. Yes. But other places can make that poison. Okay. Now, am I saying this right? Porton Down. I may be.
You are. Yes. This is the British chemical weapons facility. Yeah.
The U.S. You know, why would? I believe Russia asked for the evidence, the actual evidence and so forth. And I don't know who did that crime. I'm not saying Russia is absolved from that crime. I'm not stating that they had nothing to do with that crime. I don't know who did that crime. But when a country is asking for evidence, it should be supplied. And you can't just put that blame. I mean, whenever relations seems to be improving, you'll notice maybe in the world that somehow something goes wrong there. Okay. So, I mean, why would they go after somebody just, they were there, it was far away from the incident when they weren't Russian spies anywhere. I mean, why would they be doing this?
Well, there's you bring up two things there. There's a couple of responses to that. Number one, when it was the KGB and now that it is the FSB, it has long been a practice of theirs of using quite spectacular murders in order not just to kill the people they want to kill, but to send a warning to the people that they think might cross them but would be persuaded not to by such a spectacular murder. There was also the murder of Alexander Litvinenko, and that could literally be traced back to Moscow by a Geiger counter, by the radioactive trail of the $10 million worth of polonium that was used to poison him. But even if you question, you say, and it's possible that somebody who could have gone to great lengths to mimic KGB tactics in the UK, there's no question that journalists who were murdered in Russia, Russian journalists who are critics of Putin, were murdered at his behest.
Well, and U.S. journalists, that they were the first in the Iraq War, the first on the list was basically anybody who disagreed with the war going on there. I'm just saying, I'm not defending any journalists that are murdered anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But when the proof is presented of these cases, then obviously it's an issue, and whichever country does this, no journalist should be murdered anywhere. And in our opinion, or my opinion, Assange should be freed. You know, I mean, so, my politics kind of waver
mm-hmm.
different. I don't know what to categorize them as, but I believe Assange should be freed, and that's one of the examples of a journalist.
You're referring to Julian Assange, who's still, yes, after I don't know how many years, holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Isn't there a danger here that you're going to fall into the fallacy that Donald Trump did when somebody put it to him that Putin murders people? And he shrugs his shoulders and says, so do we. Do we really have to stoop that low?
Well, it's not about stooping low. It's about other allies that do. I mean, think about what's going on if you're a woman in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but okay? No, hold for a second.
Laurie,
hold for a second. The truth of what you're saying about that is unquestioned. But that doesn't change the fact that this is an absolutely amoral government, and it has various propaganda outlets, one of which is RT, Russia Today. This is a channel that is funded directly by the Kremlin. It is a channel where journalists, so-called journalists there, copy and paste stories emailed to them directly from the Kremlin and put them under their own name. This is unquestionably the propaganda mouthpiece of a murderer.
Well, here's the thing. Somebody could turn to the major outlets in the United States and say they're owned by transnational corporations that have that interest at heart. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying everybody, these main, you know, news outlets, are generally, and I know there are a few independent ones in the world, I understand that, but generally you could point to a major U.S. news outlet and say who owns them, and it could be connected to, you know, a large corporate raider who has interest in keeping, let's say, the nuclear plants well-funded, to cut back on environmental regulations, and so I'm just saying it's all connected. You can just say instead of state-run, instead of Kremlin-run.
You absolutely could, Laurie. But no matter what, and even the biggest critic of Donald Trump couldn't, whatever he thinks, for example, now of Mr. Bernstein, there's no question of him sending out somebody to shoot him in the street, as has happened in Russia. There is an absolute different moral plane operating there, isn't there?
I see your view, but I see people, I mean, what happened, and I don't want to go down a conspiratorial rabbit hole, but what happened to Seth Rich, who they say it's a robbery, but his jewelry and so forth was on him. I mean, people get murdered, and it's all bad, and nobody should be doing it. I mean, it could be a less, if you want to say, is it less democratic or fair than in the United States, I can make that concession, but I'm just saying, as Trump said, I mean, these things do go on everywhere. I hate to say it. But that's the case. But some of our allies seem to get a pass in the press. And by the way, I never hear about China. China's giving everybody a social media score, whether they're good citizens or not. And imagine that when you go to apply for a job.
I'll allow you this diversion because that's a good story. Can you just give people who are not familiar with it the short version of what is happening there?
Oh, on China?
Just yes.
Aren't people getting assigned a citizen score? And imagine trying to apply for a job or fly an airplane, and you rack up enough points on your good citizens, whatever the term is that they would call it. I'm calling it that. It's not probably the exact name. But
I won't test your Chinese. And this is literally being used to decisions down to whether people are allowed to buy an airline ticket or even a train ticket.
Exactly. Now, here's the main thing on this. I'm not saying, you know, I haven't witnessed this, but allegedly the re-education camps are popping up there in a big way. But there's a lot of spies in the U.S. and the university level, and also lobbyists that lobby for China. So China gets this pass, and they're more intellectual theft than ever. And this all goes on. And I'm just saying the media seems to have this thing with Russia because when Trump campaigned, he said at rallies, and I was a witness at a couple of them, where he said, what's wrong with peace with Russia? And that actually got one of the loudest applause lines, believe it or not, in the arena. This is thousands of people. This is in Connecticut that I witnessed. That was a huge applause line, is saying, what's wrong with peace with Russia? So now the media has a thing on them. But China...
Well, let me rephrase that. Let me rephrase that. What's wrong with appeasing Russia?
Well, I mean, Trump, didn't he sell the night vision goggle? Not him selling, allowing Ukraine to obtain night vision goggles and some of the night equipment that even the Obama administration didn't want to give to Ukraine. So, and then there was a sanctions imposed. So he's not been light on Russia in general. I mean, nobody can make the case that policy-wise, Trump has been light on Russia. I don't believe that case can be made. As to Crimea, I believe most polls say 95% of Crimeans want to be, you know, were happy with the reunification with Russia. I don't believe it was an annexation. But, I mean, people are free to disagree.
The reason really I wanted to talk to you, and I want to kind of put this to you and allow you to respond, is that I think that many of the causes that you raise on your website are legitimate. A lot of them I'd agree with. Some of them I don't necessarily agree with, but I see that it's legitimate to raise them. But when you mix that in with stuff like 9/11 truth, Sandy Hook conspiracy theories, and stories where the that are actually coming from RT, where the apologia is clearly to present Russia as some sort of progressive government, which it is not. Doesn't that undermine the legitimacy of every, in quotes, real story that you promote on your website?
Well, I think there's nothing wrong with questioning events. I mean, as to Sandy Hook, I'm not saying the event didn't transpire or anything like that. But when you have a school that wasn't used, that it was shut down for, and I live about, by the way, as an aside, live like 25 minutes from Sandy Hook.
Mm-hmm.
When a school is shut down due to asbestos, and also that a physicist can look at the temperature used and prove that December 12th, the heat wasn't what it should be, and there's hundreds of questions on Sandy Hook. Now, should we not raise those questions? And without being tainted as a conspiracist or a nut job, can't we raise questions? And I don't mean anybody associated with the site agrees with me. And you'll notice the writings of Michael Rechtenwald, the NYU professor, in his book. He gets furious with me, and I just want to say publicly his book's on our site, that he does not agree with questioning Sandy Hook or 9/11. Okay, so I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
Okay? But I'm just saying I'm allowed to ask questions of these events. And if people want to discard the – we have a formal police officer, Roger I think I have his name right, Halberg, who produced the images of the detectives eating pizza and stuff in the lot near a crime scene, 26 bodies. Who does that? I mean, even there's not even a TV show, as bad as it is, that would show – depict police officers and first responders and detectives eating near a crime scene. It would be insane. So, I mean, we have questions, and these questions have to be answered.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that is a question, and I'm certainly not sure it's a legitimate question. And actually, I think that, you know, people who work a job, even if it's a morbid job, probably need to eat three times a day to stay functional in any case.
Not near the crime scene, though.
Well, if that's where they are for an extended period, maybe it is. But even if it isn't, that doesn't even remotely indicate that there was anything false in the way that it was presented. But one thing you say that is that you're entitled to ask questions, and even if I think they're not legitimate questions, you are entitled to ask questions, because we live in the Western world where we have freedom of speech. People who ask questions in countries like Russia tend to end up dead.
Well, in other countries, people wind up dead.
And
you know,
other countries, too. I absolutely agree with that, yes.
Let me just say, even the Hartford Courant, because like I say, you know, I live in Connecticut. Hartford Courant, there were some diligent reporters that were questioning all kinds of mainstream, you know, reporters questioning why they couldn't get the, you know, certain photos and reports. And a lot of people appreciate that we offer these other views that aren't represented that often.
Laurie Price, Editor-in-Chief of LegitGov.org, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
Never miss a show. Follow at Challenging O on Twitter and like Challenging Opinions on Facebook for updates on each show's contents.
Go to the website for sources and links to what we were talking about. And while you're there, please like the show on Facebook. Please follow at Challenging O on Twitter and follow Citizens for a Legitimate Government at LegitGov. And get in touch with me if you can suggest a guest or topic for a future show. Also, you can find out how to subscribe to the podcast for free on your computer, on your phone, or by email. It's all at www.challengingopinions.com. And just a reminder that I do now have a Patreon account, thanks to all the people who've signed up as patrons so far. And if you can do the same as them, I'd really appreciate that. It means that I can devote more time and research to finding interesting guests. You'll find all the details on the website. Coming up next Monday, that's September 24th, I'll be talking to Larry Atkins, the author of Skewed, A Critical Thinker's Guide to Media Bias. The Challenging Opinions podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. Thank you for listening.